Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to the Vibe Within podcast. I'm your host, Gab Cohen. Each week, we will connect through stories and conversations about wellness, yoga, addictions, spirituality, mental health, rituals, and everything in between. The goal is to transform our traumas into strengths to create the change we desire in our lives. My mission is to help others by shining awareness on real-life topics so we can learn new ways to heal physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Whatever you are going through in this moment, you are not alone. So let's connect and heal our vibe within.
But how can I transform resistance? Release that struggle and harm into calm energy.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Vibe Within podcast. I'm your host, Gab Cohen, and I have been taking a little bit of a hiatus on Instagram, but I figured why not record a podcast episode, because the last couple episodes have been replays because I am preparing for a whole new round of interviews with some really awesome guests, some eating disorder experts, some healers, some ketamine treatment providers, some really cool stuff I have planned. So I figured I would just kind of replay a couple of episodes here or there that are really powerful and that I feel like would help you. So honestly, this episode might be a little all over the place, but that's kind of where my life is at right now. And the first part of this episode, I'm going to talk about some stuff that I've been going through in real time. And then I'm going to talk about sober dating and dating while, you know, bettering yourself or in recovery of some sort. Maybe you're in recovery for drug and alcohol abuse. Maybe you're just trying to stay sober. Maybe you're just living a sober-ish lifestyle. And I gotta tell you, it's equally as hard to date when you're just trying to be a little bit more sober, because everything revolves around drinking, everything revolves around smoking. Especially if you live in a city like Miami or New York or Los Angeles. And don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with having a drink or smoking a joint. There's really nothing wrong with any of that. But when you are trying to be sober and you're also trying to meet friends or you're trying to date, it can be quite intimidating to people, especially men. And I'm not trying to just one-off men right now, but I am a woman, so I'm speaking from my life experience. When I talk to a guy, let's say on an app or even just a friend or whatever, and I say, oh no, I'm not drinking right now, like I'm focusing on my health, it's either they just stop answering, or you can just sense that they get a little weird. And I'm going to get more into this, but before I, you know, get into the other topics, what I'm going to say is usually if someone isn't fully comfortable with themselves, then obviously having drugs or alcohol will be some kind of social lubricant and a buffer. Because if a girl says to a guy, and I'm sorry to use gender pronouns here, but I'm just giving you an example. If you know, on a dating app, if someone says to the other person, I'm not really drinking right now, and you know, that other, the other person, their only ideas were, oh, let's go get drinks, let's go to happy hour. No, I'm not drinking. Oh, okay, well, what about, let's go smoke a joint on the beach. So, and this is a personal example, because this happened to me recently, and I was just like, I'm just gonna unmatch this guy, because he obviously has no other willingness within him to do anything sober-minded. And so yeah, that's a big red flag for me. So that's just a little piece of what I'm going to talk about in a little bit, but I want to kind of go in chronological order, because recently I have gone through quite a, I would say it's a relapse, with drinking, with partying, and my eating disorder. I don't necessarily consider myself an alcoholic and in recovery to be sober, because I am not an alcoholic. I have gone to AA meetings, and I definitely did not feel like I belonged there, because I genuinely don't miss drinking. I don't even really like to drink. The reason why I used drugs and alcohol, especially in high school and in college, is basically to mask away the voice of my eating disorder and my depression and my anxiety. So, and I know that that's true for many people. People drink to mask their depression or their anxiety. And during art school and college and stuff like that, I'm sure I would have been considered an alcoholic, because the amount of partying that me and my friends did was every single day. I mean, it would be a Tuesday night and we would be drinking and doing coke. So I'm happy that I'm not in that kind of headspace anymore. And I know myself, and everybody's recovery is different. So if you're the kind of person that's like, you know, if I have a drink, I'm just gonna spiral, and I'm gonna wanna drink a few times a week, I'm gonna wanna go out and do coke, I'm gonna wanna go do other drugs, then that is a huge sign, and that's information that maybe you do lean on the alcoholic kind of label side. And, you know, if you believe in labels and whatever, for me personally, my eating disorder and my depression and anxiety are all wrapped up into one thing, and that is my addiction. That is my constant. So drugs and alcohol have weaved through in and out every so often with different phases in my life, but I've gone long periods of time with no drinking, with no partying, and in those phases of life, my eating disorder started to rev up. So my eating disorder is always there. The drugs and alcohol aren't always there. And I joke around and I say, oh, I have the best of both worlds. You know, I've been an addict and I've done the whole drugs and alcohol thing, and I have an eating disorder. So I really can speak to an audience who's dealing with both things, because I have dealt with both things. When I was living in Philly, there was a period of time where I was doing Molly and I was doing coke like regularly. There was like a solid, I want to say 30 to 40 days where I was doing coke every single day. And that was a rock bottom of my life. If you haven't listened to my podcast and this is like the first episode that you've listened to, I recommend going back to the episodes from 2019 and 2020. But I talk a lot about how I, you know, went through my Saturn return and I became homeless, and then I moved to Philly, and it was a really rough time. It was a really rough time, but the drugs and alcohol stopped, and then my eating disorder revved up. So again, it's like this constant dance that I feel like I'm in. And I've had every kind of iteration of eating disorders at this point. Anorexia, I was, you know, hospitalized when I was 15 years old in high school, like ninth or 10th grade. And, so I had severe anorexia, and then every iteration of my eating disorder, you know, from binge eating to then using drugs and alcohol to mask my hunger, to mask my hatred for my body when I was in high school. I went to high school in New Jersey where drugs are very easily accessible, or at least they used to be. And, you know, when we were in high school, it was normal for juniors and seniors to be doing heroin and cocaine. And I mean, thinking back, it's just crazy. But I was definitely using drugs to mask away my confusion, my self-hatred, my body image issues, because I didn't really get the treatment that I needed in order to actually fully recover when I was that age in high school. I was just doing what I was told. I got weight restored. Then, you know, binging happens, extreme hunger happens, then my exercise addiction happened because I was so uncomfortable in my body, and I didn't get the treatment that I needed. Treatment was way different back then, and I'm hoping that it's useful now for kids who are 15 years old or, you know, in high school. But so recently I've just been dealing with a lot of disordered eating stuff, a lot of body image stuff. I have talked a lot about this in previous episodes about how, you know, I got my menstrual cycle back and how that's a normal thing to go when you've dealt with eating disorders. And I want to break a myth. You don't have to be underweight to even lose your period. So for years, I'm actually not underweight. I'm actually a normal weight for my height, for my body. But for years, you know, after high school, all through college, I not only was partying and doing drugs and alcohol, but I was binging, I was restricting, and I was in that cycle with, you know, doing these drug benders on cocaine or on Adderall, and then, you know, starving myself, and then binging when I was at friends' houses because I was, like, always poor, so I would, like, eat a lot when I was with friends, or I would, like, eat in private. I would go to the gas station and get, like, a ton of unhealthy food. So I was in a really different headspace then, but I didn't realize, I didn't even realize that I had an eating disorder still. I think the fact that I wasn't anorexic anymore, I just started to push down any kind of body stuff. And there, I mean, throughout college, throughout art school, I definitely did not like my body, and I still found myself obsessing about being thin, or, you know, wishing I was thin, or obsessing about other people's bodies who were thin. I remember, you know, I went to art school for fashion merchandising, for fashion, you know, marketing. And I remember, you know, working in fashion shows and runway shows, being around a lot of models, being around a lot of tall, thin, skinny women, and being super, super jealous of them. And, you know, I'm 5'2"-ish, maybe. I'm never going to be tall. So that was always something that I remember. My body image was never good, but I always felt better when I was doing uppers or drinking alcohol. So now that I'm an adult and I'm, you know, in a different phase of my recovery, I realize where I was at mentally back then. So recovery and whenever you're recovering from anything, whether it's an eating disorder, whether it's, you know, some kind of obsession, or recovering from abuse or trauma or substance abuse, there's going to be layers, there's going to be different waves, there's going to be different phases of your recovery, and it is just being mindful of it and finding gratitude for where you're at. Like, okay, like being aware, okay, this worked when I was doing this and this didn't work, and not trying to do it all at once, because trying to fix everything all at once isn't possible. So taking small steps each day, that's why, you know, 12-step recovery programs are so successful, because you're just taking it one day at a time, you're abstaining from drugs and alcohol. But when it comes to eating disorders, it's a little bit different, because you can't just abstain from food. You have to literally rewire your brain, you have to decondition your thoughts about your body, about food, about what you eat, all these rules. You have to kind of unlearn everything, and you have to figure out what works for you. And even if you don't have a legitimate eating disorder, but you are affected by diet culture, and you feel it day in, day out, like you're kind of judging your body here and there, you think you should eat a certain way, or you're not happy with the way you look, you can thank diet culture for that, because chances are it's not like there's a bunch of people in your life who's telling you to go lose weight or go work out, fatty. You know, like, people aren't saying that to you, and if there are people saying that to you, then that is a problem. But for the most part, diet culture, if you've never dealt with eating disorders before, but you feel like you're starting to lean into these like disordered eating habits and rituals and behaviors, then it is a smart thing to do, to kind of like take inventory about, okay, who's around me? Who's talking about this around me? Where am I going where I feel like I'm comparing my body? Is it the gym? Is it yoga? Like, I mean, eating disorders run rampant in the yoga industry, and I, as someone who is in active recovery for disordered eating, I have a really hard time teaching yoga sometimes, because I am around very, very thin women who appear to have some kind of exercise addiction, or maybe they're underweight, maybe they're naturally underweight, who knows, but my eating disorder part of me is always living inside of me, and sometimes it's hard to lower that voice, so I have to really consciously like lower the volume of the voice each day. It's a practice, it's a commitment each day to commit myself to changing the way that my brain works, because when you're living with an eating disorder or a substance abuse, it's like a different part of you is living within you, and it's kind of like a bully in your brain. So that's just something to be mindful of, that it takes constant day in, day out effort to go against that voice, because it's been so many years. Like for me, it's been 17 years that I've been dealing with disordered eating, with drug and alcohol abuse, like waves of it coming in and out. Like I said, it hasn't been consistently every year that I've been abusing drugs and alcohol. I've actually gone 2 years without drinking and partying and drugging. I've gone, when I lived in LA, I wasn't really drinking for like a solid 2 years when I was, when I became a yoga teacher and I was like doing hot yoga every day. Plus I was like poor, so I couldn't really even afford to drink or do drugs. So there's that too. Okay, so before I get deeper into what I've been going through physically with relapse, with drinking, with partying, let's have a little moment for our sponsor, BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. I seriously love BetterHelp so much. They're one of my favorite sponsors, and I will tell you why I love them so much. When I started this podcast, I was going through a really rough time. I'm talking drug relapse, drug addiction, drug abuse, relationship issues, anxiety, depression. I was going through one of the craziest moves of my life. So therapy really helped me get through a lot of that. And online therapy is, in my opinion, even better than going to a therapist's office because, let's face it, our lives have changed the last year or so, and I just feel like online therapy is the best way to go. BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating with them in less than 48 hours. They really do match you with a therapist so quickly. It takes, in my case, less than 24 hours. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's professional counseling done securely online. And there's a broad range of expertise available, which might not really be locally available in all areas. The service is available for clients worldwide, and it's super easy to access your account. You can log in, you can send a message to your counselor really at any time you want, and you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, whatever you prefer. I like to do phone sessions sometimes because sometimes I like to go on a walk when I do my therapy sessions. It's really up to you. Traditional therapy can come with kind of a stressful energy attached to it. So I really love how BetterHelp is really controlled by the patient. If you want to connect with your therapist and communicate something with them, they have a journal feature, which I absolutely love. This journal feature has the option of sharing your journal entries with your therapist, but if you want to keep them totally private and anonymous towards yourself, you don't have to share them with your therapist. But I really like this feature because for many of us, starting fresh with a new therapist gives us a lot of anxiety and it can trigger us. So if you feel like that, you're not alone. I felt the same exact way because let's face it, a new therapist has to ask questions and try to get on the same page as where their client is. And sometimes rehashing our history of trauma and all the details can become kind of exhausting and a little bit annoying. So what I do when I start with a new therapist, like I did on BetterHelp, is I use the journal feature and I wrote kind of a lengthy email explaining to the therapist what I've been through in the last few years, where I'm at right now, what I'm looking for in therapy, and what kind of therapy I've done, what kind of therapy I'm interested in, and what I'd like out of a therapist. So this is super important. If starting with a brand new therapist gives you panic or anxiety or stress, this is the most stress-free approach you could possibly do. I love how they matched me with someone with the experience and qualifications that I asked for. I personally asked for a therapist who had some experience with eating disorders, depression, and relationship trauma. Once BetterHelp matched me with my therapist, she messaged me right away, and then I scheduled my first session with her for that week. The process is easy, effortless, and stress-free. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. So if you're going through a hard time right now, and let's face it, so many of us are, whether it's emotional turbulence, depression, anxiety, relationship issues, LGBTQ issues, whatever it is, body image, self-esteem, BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today. Visit betterhelp.com/vibe. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional. Vibe Within listeners, you get 10% off of your first month of online counseling at betterhelp.com/vibe. That's betterhelp.com/vibe. betterhelp.com/vibe. Go start online therapy, DM me on Instagram, let me know how it's going, and I hope that you get the help, the support, and the healing that you deserve. Okay, so we are back, and let's get into it. Let's get into what I've been going through, because I feel like if I share my complete vulnerability with you all, maybe you've been going through some crazy stuff as well. I think there's a lot that's been going on astrologically, and I'm not going to sit here and blame the astrology or the stars for my relapse, but this is what's going on. So the whole month of August was super crazy for me. I, as you know, moved back to Miami in the beginning of the summer, and like in May, and I'm teaching yoga again. And in August, I feel like nobody in Miami wants to be here, so everybody goes on vacation. So I said yes to sub like a million classes in August. So I went full force from 0 to 100 to teaching yoga, and my body just wasn't used to it. And being around a lot of bodies, being around mirrors, you know, wearing tight clothes, seeing myself in the mirror. When you deal with an eating disorder or any type of body image issues like body dysmorphia, it can be daunting to just, you know, dive head in without really preparing yourself, which I didn't. I didn't really prepare myself. I just wanted to start teaching again. I just wanted to start making money again. I was tired of not making money and like living off of what savings I have. Like I really needed to amp it up. So I said yes to like everybody who asked me to sub their class. And now I know that I can't do that. So I subbed, I taught a lot, and then I went to a wedding in Kentucky for one of my best friends, Ryan, from art school. And it was an amazing time because I got to see all of my art school friends, my college friends. I made some new friends. I mean, I saw people that I hadn't seen in like 10 years, and we all flew in, we all got an Airbnb house together, and then after the wedding, we got a hotel. Like me and four other people got a hotel room in Nashville, and I was around people nonstop for 24 hours straight for 4 days. And for me, that's a lot because I am an introvert. So being around a lot of rowdy guys and a lot of, I mean, I'm gonna say this in the nicest way. The people I went to art school with and my college friends, we partied so hard back in the day that I think I might have a little bit of a trauma response now. And it's nothing against them. It's because I know me, and I know that partying and drinking definitely relapsed me and my eating disorder. So I'm not actually beating myself up for drinking at the wedding because I had an amazing time. It was like one of the most fun nights of my life. I met a new friend, and she was single, and we just partied so hard. We had such a good time. I did have an Adderall, which helped me get through the night. And I drank a lot, but I also drank a lot of water. And I also, you know, made sure that I wasn't like abusing myself. So I'm not beating myself up for drinking and for having a good time, because weddings happen like once in a lifetime. And I had an amazing time seeing all of my friends. It was like a college reunion. With that said, it was triggering my eating disorder because I was dealing with a lot of body image issues that weekend. My hormones have been out of whack for several years, and since I just got my period back a few months ago, my hormonal like levels, they go up and down like crazy. I'm not gonna talk about pounds, but like I gain weight very easily. Especially when my hormones are out of whack. And since I'm short, you know, a few pounds, 10 pounds, like whatever, it's a lot on my small frame. So it's just a lot. And I tried to just really, you know, just have a good time, Gab. Just let yourself have a good time. And these old patterns, these old behaviors that I did in art school and college came back up. You know, I drank my body image issues away for the night. I took an Adderall. That made me happy. Temporarily, I might add, because the next day I did not feel good at all. I felt physically really awful. My body was holding on to water weight. Again, my adrenals and my hormones are all out of whack, so drinking just makes it even worse. And I also just learned that drinking actually slows your metabolism down. It fucks up your hormones even more because it's poison. So when you do ingest alcohol, it kind of signals to your body that everything must stop. We have to figure out what's going on with this alcohol that's coming into the body, and we need to metabolize it. We need to, it's poison. So the body kind of creates a hierarchy of what's important. So metabolizing food, metabolizing sugar, that's not important. It kind of goes into this shock, and that's why people gain weight from drinking. That's why people can feel puffy and bloated and gross the next day after drinking. I mean, it's science. It makes sense. I have been binging on tons of like podcasts about hormones, about eating disorder recovery. I will put the names of them in the show notes, but that's like my best kind of form of eating disorder recovery right now, because podcasts, like, there's so many eating disorder experts and drug and alcohol abuse experts who have podcasts, and they're out there for free. They're just giving out free information. They're giving out free support. They're interviewing like some of the top experts in the field. So I highly recommend, like, if you don't have a therapist, which I really hope that you can at least try to get one with BetterHelp, because they're not that expensive compared to some therapist. But if you don't, then use podcasts. Like, seriously, use podcasts. There are like a lot of like free mini courses out there as well, obviously YouTube. So yeah, so the wedding, I would say, relapsed me into a restrictive spiral, and my eating disorder kind of revved up, because when I'm around people, I kind of put my needs on the back burner. And when I'm around my friends from art school, I mean, none of them are vegan. None of them are even vegetarian. So I did pack a lot of snacks. I packed a lot of, you know, stuff that isn't perishable, that I was like, you know, snacking throughout the whole 4 days that I was on this little trip. But eating trail mix for 4 days is not sustainable. So I found myself in this, you know, mental and physical spiral. And from the drinking, from the restricting, from not hydrating enough, my body blew up like a fish, like what it felt like, you know, like, especially from eating a lot of salt as well. That can happen. But I felt so not okay in my body, and I knew that something was off. So, you know, once I got back to Miami, I realized that my eating disorder behaviors were really, really telling me to, like, go work out, go run, go lift weights, go do this, you know, cleanse. And that is not what I should have done. And I listened to those behaviors for a few days. I went on a run, I did some weightlifting, blah, blah, blah. And then I totally just kind of hit this wall of exhaustion, which is adrenal fatigue, which is Hashimoto's symptoms, hypothyroid symptoms, all of which are triggered by stress. So if you are dealing with Hashimoto's, with thyroid, with hormonal imbalance, with adrenal fatigue, if you stress your body out more by overexercising or lifting weights or teaching a million yoga classes like I was doing, because I had even more yoga classes lined up when I got back, it's almost like I did the opposite of set myself up for success. I set myself up for failure. All because I'm a workaholic and I wanted to make money. So there's that issue that I need to work out in therapy as well. I didn't really put my body's needs into effect. I was like, oh yeah, I'll right when I get back from the wedding, I'll just sub all these classes. I'm gonna get right back into it. I'm gonna make tons of money. And I didn't take into consideration, like, hey Gab, you just basically restricted and didn't eat for like 4 days. You partied, you drank, you were around a lot of people, you're introvert, like, you know, you're a highly sensitive person. Don't you think you should give yourself a few days to just like recoup? So now I know, if there is another wedding that I'm going to, I'm gonna be more prepared. I'm not gonna put my needs aside. I'm gonna make sure that I have vegan meals available, even if that means that I have to go, you know, away from the group and I have to go do my own thing, because it's hard traveling with an eating disorder. It's hard being around other people who don't have eating disorders, because you just kind of want to go with the flow and not make any issues. So after the wedding, you know, when we went to Nashville is known for like barbecue and meat and pork, and I was just like, I can't fucking believe this. So I just kind of chilled at the hotel. I ate my snacks while everybody else went out and ate, and like, that's not something that I'm proud of, because as someone who is in active recovery, that is just kind of handing over all of the power to my eating disorder. But at the same time, it's tricky because I was tired and I needed a little bit of alone time. And we, you know, I was like, oh, okay, like, you know, if I hang out at the hotel and they all go out to dinner, I'll have a few hours to myself. I want to shower. I want to lay down. I want to like listen to a podcast and just like get my head straight. So you really have to listen to your needs when you're in recovery from anything. There is no right or wrong way. You don't have to say yes to things. You don't have to say no to things. You have to do what feels good for you, because I could have went out to eat with them, but it would have been really hard to find something vegan. It would have stressed me out. It would have maybe caused me anxiety. And instead, I just nourished myself in a different way, maybe not through food, but through a hot shower, washing my body, you know, breathing deep, putting on a fresh pair of clothes, stretching, laying in bed, listening to a podcast. That is nourishment as well. But, you know, as somebody with an eating disorder, I need to continue to remind myself that nourishment, like physical food nourishment, is what I need to focus on as well. Something I have written down here in my notes is creating your recovery team. So everyone needs their own personalized team. It's as if you're creating a sports team. You want the best of the best who you get along with. You know, my recovery team right now is, I have two therapists. One of them's an eating disorder therapist. The other one's just a normal therapist. I have an eating disorder mentor who is a recovered person who had an eating disorder and she's recovered. I also have an endocrinologist who I kind of hate, but she's the one who's in charge of ordering my labs. I do go to support groups online sometimes when I have time. I have gone to AA meetings and NA meetings. I do talk to my mom about this stuff. And you know what is also important to mention is that keeping your parents in the loop, if you have both parents, if you're privileged enough to have both parents who are in your life, or any family members, sisters, brothers, friends, any like strong support friends or family that you have in your life, just like, you know, texting them and being like, hey, I'm having kind of a rough time. I just wanted to let you know, this is what I'm going through. This is what I'm doing. This is what I'm working on. And I just wanted to let you know. So, you know, I'm here for you and I might need some support, and that's it. So I texted both of my parents, told them, hey guys, I think I might need a little extra support. I needed to refill a couple of prescriptions that I haven't refilled in a while, and one of them is like $75, which is fucking insane.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
That is a medication that I really, really need to start taking again, because it's for my Hashimoto symptoms. It's for all of my inflammation. It's for my gut issues. So it's like I basically put my health on the back burner for the last couple months because I dove headfirst into, you know, teaching and working out and dating, which I'm gonna get into. Don't worry. But even dating is it causes stress. So make sure you have a recovery team. Not everybody has access to this, you know, full care. You know, if you are like an addict and you're like, I need to go to inpatient treatment, I need to go to a facility. Those facilities, eating disorder facilities and addiction facilities, they can run up to $100,000. I mean, it is fucking insane, even if you have insurance. So you have to find other ways to, you know, recover, and you have to find your way. You have to find different channels, different outlets, different people, different ideas. That's why listening to podcasts is so beneficial for me, at least, because it just gives me all different types of ideas, strategies, therapeutic standpoints, perspectives of experts. So I will put some of the podcasts in the show notes that I've been listening to. Another thing that I wrote down here in my notes is that if I didn't have my therapist and my eating disorder mentor, then I would be keeping everything in my body and in my mind, right? All my triggers, all my emotions, all my frustrations. And I've had a really, really frustrating week. It's been very mentally exhausting, physically exhausting. My body feels, you know, it was feeling really, really terrible a few days ago. And hormones play a huge role in it. So if you're dealing with like some crazy symptoms, like one day your body feels like it got hit by a truck, the next day, you know, you feel like you gained weight, the next day you have a migraine, the next day you're like you're on the toilet all day, these are symptoms that your body is communicating to you that you need to either change up your behaviors. So for me, like, what's been helping me is writing on like big white pieces of paper my plans, my notes, what I need to do in order to heal my body. Because after 17 years of restricting, you know, purging, over-exercising, binging, drug use, alcohol abuse, toxic relationships, stressing out my body constantly for 17 years, to be honest. No fucking shit, I have Hashimoto's, thyroid issues, hormonal issues, adrenal fatigue. It makes fucking perfect sense. You know, I can't sit here and beat myself up about it. I just need to come up with a plan. So whatever you're going through, you just need to come up with a plan. You need to get tons of information. You need to do your research. You need to figure out what other people have done, what tests to get done, what blood tests to get done. Get a doctor. Figure out what kind of plan is good for you and take those small steps each day to do that. For me, for example, I need to eat more protein. I need to eat more. I need to nourish more because after 17 years of eating disorders and stressing out my body, my metabolism, my hormones, thyroid is basically it's flatlined is what it feels like. My metabolism is like shot. I gain weight very easily, even if I'm eating very, very healthy. And if you know me, like personally in my life, then you probably know I eat really, really healthy, borderline like orthorexic, which I'm working on. I'm not trying to be like hyper clean and hyper sensitive with like what I eat. But at this point, I have so many food sensitivities, food allergy symptoms. Like if I have... there's just like some stuff that I don't want to say it because I don't want to scare anybody from eating certain foods because that's so stupid. But if I have certain things, I'll get some crazy symptoms. I'll get diarrhea. I will be bedridden. I will be swollen. My joints will hurt so much that I cannot even move. I will, you know, have these panic attacks. I will have depression and anxiety. I'll have brain fog. So when it comes to eating disorder recovery, like especially when you have autoimmune issues, when you have food sensitivities, it's not a one size fits all approach. Intuitive eating does not work for me. I have to come up with a plan and say, this is what I'm going to eat in the morning. This is what I'm going to eat in the afternoon. This is what I'm going to eat at night. Because if I was listening to my intuitive eating muscle, which I don't have an intuitive eating muscle because I've had an eating disorder for 17 years. So that's my kind of allergic reaction to the word intuitive eating, which I might be having somebody come on the podcast who is an intuitive eating kind of dietitian, eating disorder expert, and it's going to be interesting because I'm actually not for intuitive eating for people with eating disorders. I think that it is actually counterproductive for someone who has had an eating disorder for a decade or more to be told, oh, you just have to intuitively eat. Just listen to your body. Just what does your body want? Eat when you're hungry, stop when you're full. Doesn't make sense. And there is a eating disorder expert that I'm trying to have on the podcast. Her name is Judy. Is her name Judy? Hold on one second. Now I want to find it. Mindy. Where is it? Mindy Plutzer. She is like, she speaks to my soul. And it's like, I'm really hoping to get her on the podcast because she basically is saying everything that I'm saying right now, but like in a way better sense. So let's go back to what I was saying with finding little ways to like help you change your behaviors by writing down my plans on big white pieces of paper and like literally sticking them on my wall. So they're literally on my wall in red marker. I have green sticky notes all over the place. This is accountability. This is accountability, like little sticky notes, like just anything you can do to continue to remind yourself, hey, do you want to heal this? Do you want to feel better? Then you have to do this. Because your therapist isn't going to be with you 24/7. And if I want to, for example, heal my metabolism or heal my Hashimoto's, I basically have to stop doing cardio. Every podcast that I listen to is telling me, if you want to fix your metabolism and your stress levels and you want to have your body function properly and not have all these autoimmune symptoms ruling your life, you need to stop working out. You need to stop doing cardio. So I have on my wall, 6 months, no crazy cardio. You know, de-stressing the body is the only way to fix the metabolic damage. Nourishment and protein and rest equals healing thyroid, adrenals, metabolic damage, blah, blah, blah. You have to make these plans and hold yourself accountable. So yeah, that is what I am dealing with. Another thing is the body dysmorphia, which I kind of touched on in the beginning of the episode. And there's just so much information out there, like diet culture's everywhere, you know, like even I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast and he had Rhonda Patrick on, who I'm a big fan of hers because she's all about the sauna. She's all about like finding natural ways to cure things. But she was talking about her ketogenic diet for like 2 hours on the podcast. And to me, it just sounded like she had an eating disorder. I mean, if you want to go listen to the episode, go for it. But a lot of people in the keto community, it's just ketogenic diet is like a glamorized way of having an eating disorder, and not only glamorized, but like socially accepted, which is a problem, and it's very triggering, especially to me. So yeah.
This episode is brought to you by ThoughtCloud CBD, which is one of the purest CBD companies I'm affiliated with. They are Reiki-infused, vegan, sustainable, and pure, lab-tested, world-renowned CBD. And they have a variety of products from tinctures to topicals and even face masks and facial cleansers that are infused with CBD in them. I've actually been using ThoughtCloud CBD products for almost 2 years now, and I love their tinctures so much. It was one of the first companies that I really got deep into the tincture form of healing, and their tinctures are really nice and light. They have coconut oil in them. They don't have all these crazy flavors with additives and, you know, different types of chemicals that you don't want to be in your CBD. You just want exactly what you are getting. And the reason why you take CBD is to heal. So you don't want any of those junky fillers in there. And CBD is not meant to have that stuff in it. So ThoughtCloud is all about healing. And I recommend using their tinctures for anxiety, depression, inflammation, gut health, autoimmune flare-ups. And I also use their CBD facial cleanser bar soap, the CBD mud mask that you guys always see me posting about in my stories. So if you'd like to check out ThoughtCloud, you can follow them on Instagram. Just type in ThoughtCloud, or you can purchase anything off their website, thoughtcloud.net, and you can use discount code GypsyLoveFlow for a discount. And if they're ever having a sale, you can also use my discount code GypsyLoveFlow, and that will give you extra money off, even if it's like a 70% crazy sale that they have. Sometimes they have sales during the season. So go ahead, check them out, thoughtcloud.net. Use code GypsyLoveFlow for a discount at checkout.
Let's get into dating as a sober person. So if you're anything like me, as I mentioned in this podcast episode, I am not a typical like alcoholic, nor am I a drug addict. I have gone through phases of my life where I have done drugs, and I have gone through phases where I have not. And it is actually easy for me to stop doing drugs and drinking. What's not easy for me to stop doing is my eating disorder. So again, I'm going to clump it all into one: eating disorder, addiction, alcoholism. Let's just put it all into one big glob together. Dating as someone who is in recovery or trying to be sober from whatever it is that is their thing, right? It can be hard, because being an alcoholic or being, you know, in NA or whatever, it kind of like puts you in this category, and you have this like big community to delve into. You can go to meetings, you can meet sober people there, but if you don't feel comfortable enough to put yourself in an NA meeting or an AA meeting, and you don't want to label yourself in that way, then it kind of, you know, sucks, because then that means that you're not going to meet sober people in real life in those rooms. Which, you know, if you can go to those meetings and just be there to meet people and take everything with a grain of salt, because if you're not, you know, a quote unquote alcoholic, then you might kind of feel out of sorts sometimes. You might be like, ah, should I be here? I don't know. Whatever. You can be there. Nobody cares. Even if you're not an alcoholic, everybody is just very welcoming. When I was in Philly, I went to these Dharma recovery meetings, and now they're online. So you can go on Zoom and get free meetings like all day, every day. You just go on the Dharma Recovery website, and it'll show you all of the meetings. And I like Dharma Recovery because it's not just drinking and drugging. There are people who do have like sex addiction, some eating disorder stuff, some overeater stuff. I mean, it, like, chances are a lot of people who have one thing, they do kind of deal with other issues as well. You know, like, food and body has become such a intense kind of thing, especially with COVID. So a lot of people are dealing with body image issues, weight gain, like, you know, just being hyper aware of it. But since I'm not fully sober, right, since I don't label myself as, oh, I'm sober, I don't drink, it kind of makes it less acceptable for me to say, no, I don't really drink or smoke, because then it's like, they can be like, oh, well, why? But if I was to say, oh, I'm sober, it's not like they're gonna say, why? But you can say whatever the fuck you want. You can say, I'm taking a break from drinking. I'm focusing on my health. I just said that the other day to, I just ran into this guy who I know, who I knew from Fort Lauderdale, and I had no idea that he lives across the street from me, literally like the building across the street from me. He ran into me on the street the other day and was like, hey, how are you? Whatever. And then he was like, he texted me and he was like, do you want to go get drinks? And I was like, actually, I'm taking a break from drinking and focusing on my health, and it was fine. And last night I went over to his place and I saw another friend that I hadn't seen in a while, and we just kind of like listened to music and jammed, and I didn't drink, they were drinking. It wasn't weird at all. Like, I think it's truly just about finding people who you feel comfortable around, because hanging out with strangers is not the most comfortable thing. So that's why drinking and partying is so acceptable, because when you have an altered state of mind, it's easier to deal with people who you don't really know. And I think that's why guys really want to get girls drunk on the first date. They want to take them out to happy hour, they want to get them drinks, they want to get them drunk, because then the guy's ego will feel more comfortable, he'll be like, okay, this girl, her, she's kind of, you know, not really here, so she'll probably like me more. And it's a shame. It's a shame that a lot of guys are in this mentality, because you're kind of just setting yourself up for failure. Because once the girl, you know, doesn't want to drink, maybe the girl doesn't want to drink every time she hangs out with you. If you start out a relationship or a dating person on a foundation of drinking and partying, then that means that you are getting to know the person in a false way. And I feel like this is exactly why every single one of my relationships has failed miserably, because every single one of my relationships has started with drinking, with doing drugs. I mean, I'm not kidding. Every single one. And that's a shame too, because that's where I was at in my life. And, you know, there was one guy in Philly who I actually really liked. This is when I was sober. And he was sober for a while, and then he started to, like, allow himself to drink here and there. And I think that made me want to drink a little bit here and there. And so when we hung out, we both got incredibly drunk, and we hooked up, and that ruined our friendship. But I really actually liked him. I really actually liked his personality sober. We met sober, we hung out sober, we talked for hours sober. That is one of the first people that I started a friendship or a quote-unquote date. I wouldn't say we were dating at all, but he was pretty flirtatious with me. And then once the sex happened, everything dwindled, and it's just, alcohol really ruins things. Alcohol really fucks things up. So if you can start a relationship or a dating a person in a sober mentality, you're gonna get farther. I mean, you're not gonna have to hide yourself. You're not gonna have to worry about, how did I act that night? Oh, if I act this way, he's gonna think I'm crazy. Or, you know, it's just a bunch of bullshit. It's like, as millennials, we all need to figure out a way to just put our fucking shame and trauma from past relationships aside. And if we want to feel true intimacy and we want to feel true friendship, then we cannot continue to just drink and party when we're hanging out with new people just to make it more comfortable for them or more comfortable for yourself. I mean, I had one person that I went on a date with a couple months ago, and yeah, I drank, and I regretted it the next day because the date turned out to be like 5 hours long, and I was so drained. And I talked to him recently, and I was like, yeah, I'm not drinking anymore, so, and he was like, oh, okay, like, if you want to hang out, let me know. And I said, okay, well, I'm not really drinking anymore, so I'm trying to find places to hang out sober. And he was even saying, like, there really isn't anywhere to hang out sober. I mean, everybody drinks. And he was even, you know, admitting, like, he drinks because he feels more comfortable and more confident when he's on a date with a woman. He just feels better, he feels more confident, and, like, that sucks. But it's like that all around. I mean, for so many people. So guys, like, I wrote this down, and I'm gonna try to not sound like a total bitch, but this is how I feel. And after dating, after sober dating, after, you know, trying to date sober, this is my research that I've basically done. And this is what I feel. Like, guys' intentions of wanting to go out for a drink as a first date, it's not just the social lubricant that they're after. It's a way to mask who they really are. It's a way to get the woman into an altered state so she's more inclined to like them. And being sober with a stranger means no excuses on how they're acting. So, you know, if a girl goes out with a guy to get coffee or to go sit by the water and just talk, it's like, if the girl doesn't like the guy, the girl doesn't like the guy. If the girl doesn't like his personality, then that's it. But with alcohol involved, everything is skewed. I mean, there's been times where I've been drunk and I've looked at someone when I was sober and I was like, fuck no. And then when I got a few drinks in me, I was like, oh, maybe, yeah, look, they're cool. So it's like your whole perception of who people are is skewed, and not in a good way. Not in a good way, because you'll make excuses for people's toxic personality traits or annoying personality traits that you just don't like. So guys know that if they get the girl drunk, the girl won't really see the guy clearly, since her state of mind is skewed. And it's intimidating for a guy to go on a date with someone who wants to stay sober, because that means that they will see them with sober eyes, nowhere to hide. Guys literally have DM'd me saying that they don't feel comfortable being sober on a date. The alcohol is a way to open up and loosen up. So that's your problem. You know, if that's how you feel, that is your problem. It's not the other person's problem. If they want to be sober, that's fine. But it sounds like you just need to get therapy. If that's truly how you feel, like, oh no, I can't go on a date sober. Are you kidding me? No way. That means that you have some inner work to do, because you should be able to just go out to dinner and not have a drink and have that be an okay date. So get some therapy so that you can feel more comfortable with who you are, because that is the basis of shadow work. And you know, if you can accept your shadow and the fucked up parts of yourself, then you can be around people and accept them for who they are as well, because you know your shadow, you know your faults, blah blah blah. So the alcohol is a means to end the discomfort with oneself in hopes that the other person doesn't see them for who they really are, because there's some sort of flaws that they're covering up with alcohol, right? Alcohol is a great way to cover up shadow, you know? So why does a woman need to step down to that level just to make them feel comfortable? Or a man? Why does a woman or a man or transgender or non-binary, doesn't matter what fucking, you know, gender label you have, why does someone need to stoop down to the other person's level and drink or party just to make them feel comfortable? So it's like, and I'm sure so many women do this. I mean, like, it cannot be that all the women out here in Miami actually want to go out and drink. I really highly doubt that all women want to drink every single weekend. I think that the drinking is a ladder to meet people. And what people really want is to meet people. What people really want is intimacy. What people really want is to date and to get out there and to get out of the COVID cave. So, you know, but a lot of women and men and everyone drink and poison their bodies just so that the other person feels comfortable, especially on a date, because they don't want the date to be awkward. Everyone needs therapy. Let's all get therapy, because I feel like that would really help us all just be more comfortable with ourselves and be able to set boundaries and say to the person, you know what, I'm taking a break from drinking. Let's go grab coffee. Let's go for a walk around the river, whatever, you know. You don't have to go get drunk to connect with someone. Also, another kind of aspect of this that I've been thinking about is when a guy or a girl expects the other person to go out and drink with them on the first date, it's like, maybe you don't deserve to see me drunk and that version of me, the drunk and fun and altered state of mind me, until you know who I am sober. And that's the beauty. That was actually the beauty of being at this wedding, is that everybody knows each other, sober, drunk. Like, we all know each other. It's not like we were all just having fun because we were all drunk. We all genuinely know each other from years ago from being in art school. So you know, I feel like you kind of really do deserve for that person to give you the respect of, let's get to know each other sober a couple times and then let's go get drinks. But if we start a relationship on a false sense of reality with substances or mind-altering things, then that means the foundation of the friendship or the relationship is built on fake rocks. It's going to fall eventually. Your true self is going to come out, and unless every time you hang out on a date and you're drunk or high, you know, that's not sustainable. Just like crash diets, eventually your body is going to start craving food, binging, you're going to gain weight because of the restriction. So if you continue to restrict yourself from being your true self, and you're hiding your true self with drugs and alcohol, and you're trying to be this perfect person, you're only fucking yourself over in the long run. Your true energy and flaws are going to come out and play, and that will turn off the person even faster, because it's almost like you've set yourself up for failure. So you might as well just let them know who you are from the get-go, and if they like you sober, awesome. Maybe they won't like you drunk. I mean, there have been times where people told me, like, wow, you are really different drunk. Sometimes I'm really fun and go lucky and exciting, like I was at the wedding. But there have been times where I've been like, I've yelled and I've screamed and I've gotten in physical altercations with boyfriends because I was like drunk as fuck or like high. And that's not cool either. So yeah, making friends in the sober community is also kind of hard. Losing friends is normal when you're trying to be more conscious of not just being sober, not just recovery, but your boundaries. You know, stating your needs, or you know what I mean when I say fake friends and acquaintances and real friends. Like, you definitely know what I mean. A couple people probably came up into your mind, and recently I've lost a couple of, I would say, acquaintances, because when you message someone on Instagram, when you message someone on Instagram and they see your message and they don't answer you for weeks, or they never answer you, that is not a friend. I'm gonna repeat it. If you have a quote unquote friend and you message them on Instagram to hang out or to meet up, maybe they're in town, maybe they're visiting, maybe you haven't seen them for a while, and they see your message, it says seen, and they never respond, that is not a friend, okay? That is not a friend. Unfollow, mute them, just move on, because you can fucking meet better people who actually want to fuck with your energy. It's possible. You just have to put yourself and submerge yourself into places, you know, like, even if it's just like going to Starbucks or going to the coffee shop and sitting there, or just going for a walk, saying hello to people who are walking their dogs, saying hello to people who are, you know, in your building, walking around, going to the grocery store, even if you don't need anything, can you just walk around? Can you go to 7-Eleven and get a cup of coffee or a snack? Who knows who you might run into? I mean, this is a perfect example. So the other day I was, you know, teaching yoga, and I had an hour in between my two classes. So I taught yoga and I was like, what am I going to do? Am I just going to sit here at Equinox and, like, you know, not really talk to anyone and just wait for my next class, or I could go for a little walk? So I went for a walk, and that's when I ran into that guy who I hadn't seen in like 10 years. The last time I saw him was when I lived in Fort Lauderdale, and I was like 21 or 22, and this is when I had a drum set and we would all like have jam sessions, and like I would invite people over with their guitars and their bass guitars and their amps, and like I sucked at the drums, but we still had fun, and he was part of those group of friends. If I didn't go for that walk, if I didn't get myself going, if I didn't go outside, then I wouldn't have ran into him. I wouldn't have known that he lives across the street. I wouldn't have hung out with them last night. And now I have a new friend who lives literally across the street. Like, you have to listen to those pings. If you feel like you're not getting out enough, then you need to start getting out more. You need to make that a priority. You need to go out, go for a walk, go talk to people. Just fucking do it. Because if you're lonely, what's worse? You know, sitting inside, being lonely, having a pity party, or going outside, saying hi to someone, even if they don't say hi back, even if you don't have like a long conversation, you don't need to have a long conversation just to feel that, what is that called? It's not serotonin. It's a feel-good molecule that gets released. Oxytocin. So when you hug people, when you say hello to people, when you connect with people, even in like the most minuscule ways, oxytocin is released. And that's that feel-good intimacy kind of molecule that makes you feel like, okay, like I have, you know, some connections with people. So really just finding any kind of ways to be around people, because if you do that enough, you're gonna meet someone. You know, another example is like, if you don't belong to a gym, like you don't have to go to the nicest gym ever. You can just get a crappy gym membership, just go maybe a couple days a week. Who knows who you'll run into? Who knows who you'll meet there? Go to concerts alone. Fuck it, dude. Meet people on Instagram. Like, I went to the Alanis Morissette concert a couple weeks ago with one of my followers, and he's fucking awesome. If you're listening right now, what's up, Buddha? And he was like, hey, I'm going to the Alanis Morissette concert. Like, I know you don't really know me, but like, you're more than welcome to come ride with me. And we had an amazing time, and like, we had a great conversation in the car, and like, we vibed, and we had such a good time listening to Alanis Morissette because he's a fan of her, and I'm a fan of her, and it was a good fucking time. And if I didn't put on my stories on Instagram, hey, is anybody going to the Alanis Morissette concert, then I wouldn't have gotten that opportunity to go, to make a new friend, to, you know? So it's like, you gotta put yourself out there, even in like the most stupid ways, even if it's on social media. So that's my spiel about trying to meet people in, you know, the sober community or sober-ish community or whatever. And if you are in this, you know, tornado of dating, whether you are whatever gender you are, doesn't matter. You need to know exactly who, what kind of person you want. Don't settle, because that's just going to make you feel like shit. I've settled so many times in my life, and now I'm not settling, and I swear to God, I feel like I am more magnetic, if that makes sense. Like, I find that men are like saying hi to me and opening doors for me, and like the door guys downstairs, the valet guys downstairs at my building, like a couple of them are like kind of flirtatious. And it's like, I feel like when you build your worth and you know exactly what you want, and you're not a doormat, and you're not just gonna accept any crumbs of love, then you become more magnetic. So I know what I want. I need an alpha dude to sweep me off my feet, or I'm not budging. And it's kind of like I'm waiting for my own like Travis Barker. If you have seen all of these photos circulating on Instagram of Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker, the love that they have gives me like the chills, because they've known each other for years. They were friends first. They have known each other since, I think they were like, you know, I think she was like 18 or 19 when she met him, and like, they always lived like in the same neighborhood in Calabasas, and like, they were always friends. And now they're like in their midlife, you know, they're in their like mid 40s, and they have this beautiful relationship that you know, and they're both so submerged in each other. And you can tell that it's real because they're literally like kissing each other's hands. They're holding each other's hands. They're traveling to Italy together. They're with each other all the time. You can't be with someone 24/7 if you don't like them or if they don't like you, or you have to mesh. You have to live well together. You have to kind of be on the same level if you're going to be with each other all the time like that. So you know it's real. So that's my celebrity like couple inspiration is Kourtney Kardashian and Travis Barker. I'm just waiting for my Travis Barker. I'm just trying to be patient and I'm not trying to rush the process. I am just trying to, you know, get better physically, emotionally, spiritually, and I know that someone will come eventually, but there's really no rush. Dating is a journey. It's going to be hard. Finding friends as an adult, you know, as a soberish adult is hard. So just give yourself some credit for trying and keep putting yourself out there. And yeah, that is all I have. I hope this episode helped. If you enjoyed it, please rate, review, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Or share it with a friend or a family member. You can screenshot it, you know, put it in your stories, tag me on Instagram, GabLoveFlow. I really appreciate you all for listening and for being here through the journey, and I hope that you're all having an amazing September so far, and just keep doing you, keep listening to your body, and just keep moving on. Keep moving along. You got this.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.